You're listening to FM 88, WJSU, Jackson.
This is The Full Spectrum. The show provides a wide range of news and competing opinions. The commentaries, beliefs, and viewpoints expressed by segment hosts and guests do not necessarily represent those of WJSU-FM, Jackson State University, or its administrators. The content of this program is for informational and/or entertainment value only and not meant as an endorsement or recommendation in lieu of professional guidance on relevant topics.
It's the full spectrum. It's the full spectrum. We got news,
entertainment,
interviews, and so much more. It's the full spectrum.
On today's show, Jackson's 1% Tax Commission meets. We'll tell you what they talked about. And the ACLU of Mississippi talks about their biggest issues of 2016. Welcome to The Full Spectrum for Thursday, December 9th. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. As we said, the Jackson 1% Sales Tax Commission met yesterday. And joining us now to tell us all about it is JSU TV's Eric Walker. Welcome to you, Eric. First time on the show.
Oh, yeah. Thank you all for having me. It's always great to doing a radio program for JSU and all of our family here. But I got to tell you, my brain is hurting, Dwayne.
Why is that, Eric?
Well, you know, I was at the 1% sales tax meeting yesterday, and I've been working on this story for JSU's morning show, Metro Morning Live with Rob J, all day. And sometimes you got to go back and reevaluate stuff that happened, two, 3 years ago in order to make a complete, full unbiased report. And so when you uncover when you have to go back to fully tell the story, and you know, sometimes it takes a lot of time, and it can wear a toll on your brain.
You know, and this has been taking a toll on many people's brains because people can't figure out exactly what's going on with the commission. They have been a little less than transparent, but maybe it's because it's a lot to get together and everything. How was the meeting and what was the main topic of conversation?
Yeah, well, actually, Dwayne, you brought an interesting topic up. And before we get into what they were actually talking about, let's talk about the transparency, if we can, for a second, the transparency of the group. OK, so yesterday, actually, I was the only JSU TV was the only news media outlet actually inside of the meeting.
Nice. Way
and
to go,
so,
Eric.
Yeah. And you'll find out why in a second. I'll let the folks make up their mind. I'm basically giving you the facts here. So about 2.5 hours before the meeting was supposed to take place is when they actually decided they were going to have it. And it's very interesting because, you know, these meetings are they're free and open to the public. Anybody who wants to attend can attend. Media can attend if they want to. The issue is actually knowing when and where the meetings are going to take place and if they're going to take place. And I found out yesterday, about a few of the members who are on the board could not attend, either out of town on business or what have you. So they didn't have a quorum that they needed to actually make a full vote if they wanted to anyway. So yesterday's meeting was kind of here's where we are with what we're looking at. When we're talking about transparency, you have that issue there. So when I'm in this meeting, you know, this is a very small meeting. We're inside of JRA. That's where they're meeting now. First off, they were next door. They used to be next door on the fifth floor. Now they're at JRA, and so the meeting room there is so small that, you know, me with my little camera, I'm actually at the back of the room. That's the only place I can fit. And so to give you an idea, every time the door swings wide, I got to get out of the way so somebody else can come in. That's how small this room is. And again, you know, if somebody wants to attend these meetings, basically you need to know somebody on the board or know somebody who's actually a part of the process to know when and where the meetings are going to take place. So it's kind of like me giving you the keys to a brand new Ferrari with no engine in it.
Wow. And, you know, there are going to be a lot of people who are not happy to hear what you're saying, because, you know, that it was a big deal to get that passed in the first place. And many people are saying, where's the money? I know they allegedly reportedly have collected quite a bit of money, but they haven't spent a lot of it.
Yeah, you know what? And that's the sentiment in the community. A lot of folks are, for lack of better words, disgusted, wondering, you know, where's the money? You know, we do see some things going on, to be fair here. You know, we do see some of our streets and roads being repaired, but it seems like it's at a snail's pace. You know, yesterday we found out that so far, since its inception, the 1% sales tax has collected about $35 million. So the question is now, where is all of that money going? You know, where are we in the process of them using that money to do what they say they're going to do?
I know you bought a soundbite with you. Who is it? And set it up for me.
Yeah. So basically, I had a good conversation with Pete Perry yesterday. Pete Perry was put on the board. He was, if folks remember, you know, the different folks who are on the board, they're appointed by different people. So the governor got an appointment. The lieutenant governor got appointment. The speaker of the house got an appointment. Anyway, Pete Perry was the governor's.
The mayor got two or three.
The mayor got three appointments. Uh-huh. The mayor got three appointments, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Pete Perry was actually Governor Bryant's pick to be on that board. So I talked to him yesterday, and I want to be clear: Pete Perry and the mayor have not always seen eye to eye when it comes down to things in the meeting. So the things that I'm about to say and we're relying to what he says. Those are a lot of that is what is his opinion. I want to be clear on that. But basically, Pete Perry, this soundbite that you're about to hear, you know, I had a good conversation with him, and we were talking about actually Dr. Myers. You know, Dr. Myers is no longer with Jackson State University, but she was also on the 1% sales tax commission. And so rumors were wondering about what happened to her seat. What's going to happen to her seat? Does that mean that Dr. Rod Page slides into that role? And so I asked him that question directly on the record, and that's what his response was.
Okay, let's hear it.
If you would, the questions surrounding Dr. Myers' departure from Jackson State. If you would just clear it up real quickly. First off, the seat that she was appointed to didn't belong to Jackson State. It was something that the chamber appointed her.
Correct.
So Dr. Page doesn't transition into that position.
No, so the legislation that created the commission, the governor, lieutenant governor, speaker all got an appointment. The city of Jackson got three appointments, and the Chamber of Commerce, downtown chamber, got four. And the chambers were supposed to be representing business interests in town. But at the time when they originally started, they appointed Dr. Myers, Dr. Beverly Hogan at Tugaloo, another businessman here in town and representative of the chamber, Dwayne O'Neill. They were for staggered terms when we first started, and Dr. Myers' term was either a one-year or two-year term, I've forgotten which. Anyway, her term expired, and it expired almost at the same time as when she left Jackson State, but it was two totally independent issues. Her term expired, and the chamber appointed somebody else in her place, but it had nothing to do. Her seat on the commission didn't lose because she left Jackson State. It's not a Jackson State position.
Okay. So he seemed pretty open to you.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, you know, to recap what he was saying, the position that she had on the board was either 1 or 2 years. We tried to get that confirmed today through the Chamber of Commerce. We weren't able to reach them. But long story short, she was one of the members on the board who had a shorter term. So her term on the board was relatively at the same time that she left Jackson State. So that position was for her. In other words, it doesn't transfer over to Rod Page. But from what I'm hearing, the person who took that role, or should I say, who took that seat, is someone who is well known to Jackson. It's a familiar name and a familiar face. And if you tune in to Metro Morning Live in the morning, 7 a.m., we'll tell you who it is.
I think I know, but tune in tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How is it for you? We've got about a minute left. How are you enjoying your new position over there? You have been doing freelance stuff with your staff now. Welcome to the JSU family. How's it going?
Oh yeah, pretty good. You know, I've covered news in Jackson for over 5 years now. I've been a community activist, and so you know, folks pretty much know me when they see me around town. You know, it's good to be good to be you know doing what I'm doing again, and you know, I try to be as fair as I possibly can when telling these stories, and you know, hope folks tune into a Metro Morning Live Monday through Friday beginning at 7 a.m.
All right, well, Eric, thank you for dropping by, and you're going to be a frequent guest on the show now that we've got you here. But although, let me give you a warning, he'll have to call in sometime because this is a long day for you.
Yeah, it is a long day for me, but thank you for having me.
Hey, you know, it really is our pleasure, and I want to thank you so much. All right, stick around, because when we come back, a conversation with the folks from the ACLU of Mississippi.
This program is underwritten in part by Jackson State University's JSU-TV. JSU-TV features Nighteek with Edward St. Pay, Monday through Friday at 10 p.m., a nightly talk show featuring live interviews, music performances, community announcements, and much more on JSU-TV, Comcast Cable, Channel 14. JSU-TV, your passion, our promise.
Hope Policy Institute provides independent, nonpartisan analysis of public and private policies that affect the financial security of Mid-South families and communities. Hope's work supports efforts to create an environment that ensures that all people, no matter where they live, have the opportunity to prosper. Together, we can improve the lives of people in our community. Together, there is hope. HopePolicy.org.
Welcome back to Cool and Current WJSU. You're listening to The Full Spectrum. It's been a big year in 2016 for a lot of folks, but especially the folks over at the ACLU of Mississippi. I spoke with Executive Director Jennifer Riley Collins and Director of Communications Sakia Summers. Talk to me about what you think were the biggest issues you guys confronted this year as an organization, Jennifer.
So the ACLU, as you know, Dwayne, has three centers of focus. We have criminal justice, reform, equality for all, and our cornerstone issue, which is freedom of speech and expression. Inside of each of those centers, we had victories. So in our criminal justice reform, you know, we did battle regarding imprisoning the impoverished through our debtors prison reform work. Inside of our Equality for All, you know, we helped beat back HB 1523, which was a gateway to discrimination here in the state of Mississippi. And in freedom of speech and expression, we do what we did every day, which is to ensure that students across this state have a right to express themselves, whether it be to take a knee at a football game, to refuse to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, or whether it be the formation of a GSA. And so we have had success in all of the centers of focus, which are key to our mission.
And you know what's interesting to me? It surprises many people who are not familiar with your core work when you are strange bedfellows, so to speak, with different organizations, because across the country you might be on the side of the KKK or whoever when it comes to the issue of free speech. And I think that may be one of the reasons why the ACLU, both nationally and here in the state, has been so enduring, because you really do stand up for the rights of all people.
Yes.
Especially in that area when it comes to free speech.
Well, you know, we look at the Constitution as a living document, and one that is intended to ensure that all Americans, and for our affiliate here in the state of Mississippi, for all Mississippians, to ensure that justice is equal and equitable.
And I want to talk about the debtor's prison issue. And I remember that when I had your legal director on, Zakiya, he was telling me that the way that you all guys worked that out with the city of Hattiesburg, right? Was it
Biloxi?
Biloxi, right. Mm-hmm. That it was kind of a inventive and landmark way to deal with it. It could be a precedent-setting case in how other municipalities here in the state and across the country decide to deal with this issue.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a model reform settlement, because the things that we were able to do in Biloxi through our discussions with the mayor there and the city attorney is something that can be used not only throughout the state of Mississippi but across the country. And that's really just about the need for people who can't afford these fines and fees and who may be facing incarceration to have some type of defense system, to have someone that can represent them in the court system where they may be going in, you know, unknowingly, just not knowing what the process is, and maybe feeling intimidated or feeling like, well, how do I afford to pay my light bill or put food in my refrigerator and I have this traffic fine? Well, most people are going to say, I got to eat, or I need lights in my house. Right. And they're going to forget the fees. And so they need someone who has their back. And so what we were able to do with our debtor's prison litigation was to make that a reality for, you know, people in Biloxi. And we look forward to spreading that message throughout the state.
As I was telling the two of you before we went on the air, I think the last time I heard the term debtor's prison, I was reading a Charles Dickens novel, seriously. Mm. And when the federal government filed that postmortem report on Ferguson, Missouri, after Michael Brown's death, one of the things that came out is how they were criminalizing poverty. And I think it was a huge percentage of Ferguson's budget that was being raised on the backs of poor people. They would fine people, and then they would fine them for not paying the fine, and then they would jail them. They were making thousands of dollars off of poor people. And the federal government was like, no, this is not, you shouldn't be doing this.
And all of these matters are interrelated. And so if you are thinking, well, a person got a traffic ticket or some other small matter fine, they should just pay it. Well, everyone doesn't have $200 or $400 just to drop. And so like Zakiya was making the point, when you have to choose between basic needs and medicine, you're going to choose to do those things. Right. If you are then incarcerated and you're already struggling financially because you may be working a job that pays barely minimum wage, and then you lose that job because you get locked up for failure to pay a fine, particularly to a private probation company, when you have been provided no defense, no assessment of whether you could even afford to pay the fine, it all becomes circular and continues to penalize people for simply being poor.
It's that time of year, folks, and you'll hear the top 10 news stories. And when you guys as an organization look at the work you've done for the year, it also turns your attention to next year as well. What do you think? Is it going to be the same issues? Do you sometimes not know what's going to pop up next year?
So I will tell you, we're already looking at not only what we would propose to the legislature to ensure that rights are protected in the state of Mississippi, but we're also looking, knowing that we're going to have to try to beat back some legislation. I was reading in the newspaper recently where Blue Lives Matter legislation is likely to be proposed. We're looking at where anti-sanctuary cities legislation.
Were you surprised? Before we move on from that, you know, the South Carolina case that just was decided, Walter Scott, right? It's frustrating for many people because we have eyes, you know. And for many people, I've heard many analysts, it seems across racial lines, who were like, no, you weren't shooting in self-defense, even if you felt you were. You shot somebody five times in the back, and you apparently
staged the crime scene. You moved a taser from where it was over here near this body to enforce your story. Do people have a right to be to feel like there is just not equal justice under the law?
So, yes, people, of course, have a right to be frustrated. People have a right to be afraid. And that is why some of our work is centers around police transparency and accountability. Of course, we want to make sure that due process rights that are afforded in the Constitution are afforded to all, police and the citizen. But when we look at some of the practices that have happened across the country, we want to make sure in the state of Mississippi that we're pushing accountability inside of our police departments. We don't want to over-militarize our police departments because this is not a combat zone. These are our family streets that families live along. And so we want to make sure that if police departments are having body cameras on them, because we know what happened in the Michael Scott case because someone recorded. And we want citizens to know that you have the right to record so that what does happen is accountable. But when police officers are wearing body cameras, we want to make sure that standards exist so that there is not field editing and so that people have a right to know that they're being recorded.
We've got to take another break, but when we come back, more of my conversation with Jennifer Riley Collins and Zakiya Summers from the ACLU of Mississippi.
Hope Enterprise Corporation is a family of development organizations dedicated to strengthening communities, building assets, and improving lives in the Delta and other economically distressed parts of Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Tennessee. Together, we can improve the lives of people in our community. Learn more about Hope's work to create opportunity where it is needed most. Hope-EC.org.
No one has you covered like we do here at From the Press Box to Press Row. I'm your host, Donald Ware. Join me each week as we talk a lot about HBCU football. We'll also talk with some of the top sports figures and talk sports with some of the top entertainers in the business. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week right here on your favorite station.
WJSU. Catch From the Press Box to Press Row Fridays 5 p.m. on Cool and Current WJSU.
Welcome back to The Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. We're talking with Jennifer Riley Collins and Zakiya Summers from the ACLU of Mississippi, and we were talking about the subject of criminal justice.
When in the state of Mississippi or across this country, a police officer guns a person down, a citizen down. You know, as we have seen in so many cases, as we can just
even
name.
Even in Columbus.
Yes, we can see right. All the cases that have played a route. Yes, even here in the state of Mississippi, Columbus, Tupelo. We want police officers to be held as accountable as a citizen would be held if they were the person who did the shooting. And so for that reason, we would call on the state legislature to ensure that a special prosecutor is always put in place. We applaud what happened with District Attorney Colomb, who said, you know, it's not for my office to handle this case. And so he called for a special prosecutor. We think that that should be required. We don't think it should be left up to the discretion.
Let me talk to you about this, because I think this is one of the most complicated but necessary areas that we're going to have to deal with as a country coming up. I find it very interesting. One of the cases you cited when I asked you what were some of the highlights of the year, and 1523, we now know that the governor has come back. They're not letting this go. The governor has come back and feels, and I think it's an interesting argument, whether I agree with it or not, that I am fighting for the rights of religious people to say no. I don't want the government to tell people what they have to do if it infringes upon their religious beliefs. I think it's a fascinating discussion. In my mind, it obviously comes down to the law. I mean, if you...
So Dwayne, let me say this. I think the governor is talking out of both sides of his neck.
Go ahead, explain.
And I say that because you cannot claim that on one issue and then say the government has a right for a woman to decide to do what she's going to do with her own health care in another issue. So if the government...
Right, because you could argue that's a religious-based belief for that woman. Like, she has had her own discussion with God, and she has done her internal belief and says, under my belief, I have a right to do this.
Yes.
Well, that's an interesting argument. Either way it goes, though, I guess my feeling is that when all is said and done, it's going to be based on what the law says. We have to go with the law. And 1523 was ruled unconstitutional, and that's what you go with. How do you feel as an organization that deals with things based in the law, but still that there's going to have to be some discussion across lines?
So if I think that there should be respectful discourse and that discourse should be allowed. In last year in the Mississippi legislature, we saw that was not how things wanted to play out. Those in control of the legislature tried to shut out voices and not allow public debate on these contested issues. We vote for and send legislators to the Capitol to make the best decisions for on behalf of their constituencies, not to follow a set party agenda, but to make the decisions that are in the best interest of the state of Mississippi, not one party. And so we encourage our legislators to look at what makes Mississippi better. What is going to make Mississippi better are policies and laws that ensure equitable access to opportunity across the state of Mississippi, that are going to ensure that there are protections set in place for all Mississippians. You know, you talk about the law, Mississippi has no law protecting, making special protections. And yet I see that there is a move afront to make a police officer a protected class. Well, if you're going to make a police officer a protected class in the state of Mississippi, you should also make me a protected class because I'm a woman. You should make me a protected class because I'm an African-American. You should make an LGBT citizen a protected class.
Right.
If you're going to protect one, you need to be prepared to protect all. And the ACLU of Mississippi does that. We stand in defense of freedom for all.
Are you worried? For years now, I've worried about the political makeup of judicial bodies like the Supreme Court, because you wonder, I can't help but wonder, on a 5-4 split, why did it split along party lines? I worry about how malleable legal decisions are to political considerations. And it makes you go back and wonder, like something like 1523, if you keep pecking back, if you keep going back to the court, do you ever worry that, okay, you might find a judge that's sympathetic to an argument that would allow a different ruling to be made on
that
case?
It is why organizations like the ACLU, and particularly the ACLU, stand in defense of freedom. When we look at rollback of rights, when we look at the Civil Rights Act and the rollback that happened with it in 2014, when it was gutted, we know that we must always stand in defense.
Right. And talk to me about, I want to make sure before we get off the air, you guys on Friday night at 5:30 are having an open house. Tell me about that and who's invited and what it's going to be like.
Yeah, our annual open house is open to the public. It is.
That's why we call it an open house.
It is an open house, so please come. It will be Friday, December 9th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at our headquarters in downtown Jackson. We're located at 233 East Capitol Street. So please come. We've invited media. We've invited legislators, friends, family. We'll have refreshments there. Bring a friend and just look forward to having a good time and learning more about the ACLU in Mississippi.
And if you cannot make it to the open house, we definitely invite you to check us out on our website at www.aclu-ms.org.
Well, you know, I cover you guys. I'm sure you'll be back on. And keep up the work that you do, because you fight for all Americans.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that's our show for today. Don't forget to catch Metro Morning Live with Rob J tomorrow at 7 and again at 10. You can catch Eric Walker's piece tomorrow morning. And don't forget to tune in again Monday afternoon for more of The Full Spectrum right here on FM 88.5. You can also catch us on WJSU.org. Up next, Latin Jazz with host Dale Morris.
For more than 20 years, Hope Credit Union has provided responsible financial products and services to families and businesses across the Mid-South. You can learn more about Hope's work to create financial opportunity for people and communities in the nation's most persistently poor regions at hopecu.org. Together, we can improve the lives of people in our community. Together, there is hope.
Cool and current. WJSU.